There's the Arizona Rooster waking you up for the Arizona Birthday Weekend Celebration, Valentine's Day special edition of Rosie on the House. Good morning, Arizona. It is your Saturday morning wake-up call, and we're here broadcasting live from the State Capitol Mall, right underneath the shadows of the State Capitol Building, which in today's capacity has served as the Arizona Capitol Museum. We have communications manager of the museum here with us this morning, Ms. Kim Crawford. Kim, thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Rosie. Thanks for having me.
Here celebrating Arizona's birthday. We've got a whole series of events going on today. Invite them down.
Well, come on down to the Arizona Capitol Museum. We open today at 10 a.m. If you get here early, don't worry. We've got plenty to do out on the Capitol Mall at Wesley Bowling Plaza. But at 10 a.m., we'll have the State Archives displaying rare documents regarding Charles Poston, who also happens to be the subject of our presentation today at noon from the Arizona Capitol Museum Guild.
The father of Arizona.
Yes. The presentation's by Gilbert Storms. He recently wrote a book on Charles Poston. And then we also have Supreme Court Justice Scott Bales receiving the Polly Rosenbaum Award for his support of the State Library. For those that don't know, the State Library and the museum are part of the Secretary of State's office, so we're celebrating the Chief Justice and how he has recognized libraries as being part of getting out into the community and a way for the community to access some legal information.
And the award is named after
Polly Rosenbaum. Mm-hmm.
Who I think retired from the legislature at 92.
I'm not sure how old she was. She was one of the longest serving legislators at 45 years.
She was from the Globe, Miami area.
Yes.
Gila County.
She took over the post after her husband passed away, and she was a real, real champion for education and for libraries and archives and everything that we do here. So we honor her by naming our awards after her.
Wow. She was a true legislative icon for decades in the great state of Arizona. So how appropriate to name something like this after her. We'll be talking a lot more about people, events, and the actual building itself from 9 to 11 with State Historian Dr. Jack August, who Kim has arranged for us to get with. So I'm really excited. We all had lunch down here at Friday. What was it called?
Food Truck Friday.
And had lunch down here on the mall. And between Dr. Jack August and Don Ryden and you and I, we're going to be able to talk up a historical storm for 2 hours between 9 and 11.
Yes, for sure. We're looking forward to it very much. Thank you.
We are as well. 8 o'clock hour. We're in the landscape outdoor hour of Rosie on the House. We've brought in special guests, Mr. John Eisenhower from Integrity Tree Service.
Good morning.
If you have a tree question, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You could also text your question to 411-923, or if you need a visual you need to send us a visual of your tree, you can email that to info@rosieonthehouse.com. February, Valentine, Arizona. Citrus is the first thing that comes to mind.
Yep. On Valentine's Day every year, we think about fertilizing our citrus trees and also some other trees, too. This is a good time to put fertilizer down on your garden, your trees, your shrubs, your ground cover, your flowers. It's a great time to be fertilizing as the bloom is just setting. We've got fruit trees are blooming, but we also have a lot of other trees that are starting to set bloom, so you want to get that fertilizer down. Good time of year.
Do y'all have a best practice or a favorite method for applying y'all's?
That's a good question. You know, fertilizer is a chemical, and the trees and plants don't really recognize what form it's being delivered. All they're anxious for is to make sure they get the chemicals. You know, a lot of our fertilizers are in a slow release formulation. They've got a coating over the fertilizer particle on your granules, which allows them to kind of slow release over a longer period of time. So they stay in the soil. Each time you irrigate, they're releasing that fertilizer to the plants. But there's good quality liquid fertilizers, which are kind of nice because they distribute better into the soil. We do a lot of liquid fertilizer applications, because then you're immediately getting that into the root zone, and we like to be able to distribute that quickly to the trees and get some nice uptake. So any way you put it down, you could even do foliar applications. Occasionally we'll spray trees with a fertilizer application on some of our cypress trees. We've had really great success on cypress that have started to kind of gray out. They've had some problems with mites. Well, in addition to the miticide treatments, we're actually spraying the trees with a fertilizer product, and we've had really great results. They're nice and green because the actual foliage can absorb the fertilizer as well. It doesn't have to just be put down on the ground.
What do you do at your home? We've got a master garden tour coming up here March 2nd, and your home is featured on that. You guys have very impressive grounds.
Yeah, that's March 12th. Saturday, March 12th is the Master Gardeners Real Gardens for Real People tour. And it's a great tour they have every year. They feature gardens in a certain part of town. This year it's going to be in North Phoenix, Scottsdale. There's 6 gardens on the tour. You buy tickets, and then you can attend all these various gardens. Well, my wife and I are hosting one of those gardens, and we just are excited about it, getting the place all spruced up and ready to go. And we'll have experts from all over the valley attending each of the various gardens. At our garden, we have an expert on chicken raising chickens. We have an expert on pruning trees. We'll have an expert there on raising fruit trees in the desert. We have 19 varieties of fruit trees at our house, so we've got a plethora of citrus and stone fruits and figs and grapes and mulberries, and we've got lots of big selection of trees, and it's exciting. It really is. We're getting everything ready to go.
Nothing like having guests over, especially expert garden guests, to help you
We have an expert pruner coming in, Rick Robinson of Stillwater Landscape Management, because they, as the garden host, I've sort of excused myself from teaching the pruning because I want to be able to welcome the many guests. They expect 300 or 400 people to come through the tour every year, so busy day from 9 till 4. So tickets are available online. Just look up Master Gardener Real Gardens for Real People Tour, and you can get yourself some tickets and start anywhere on the tour you want. You don't have to start at any specific one of the 6, and spend a day, get some nice, great gardening ideas. It's a fun tour to go through. In fact, we get to go through the tour the day ahead.
Nice.
The garden owners, because we won't have a chance to see the other gardens in their full glory, so they give us a little pre-tour on the day before. And I'm really looking forward to getting new ideas. Take my notepad, and you can go around and just learn from all these other great gardeners.
You mentioned you kind of step back from your pruning. That is one of your bullet points for today, pruning frost damage. Are we out of the clear? I don't know. It's getting chillier as the sun comes up. This breeze has picked up between these two buildings. And
normally our average last day of frost is February 15th through the Phoenix area. It can vary slightly from community to community. But this is a time of year when we do say you can start pulling the frost cloth off your plants. The one caveat is if you just look at the weather report right now, look at the 10-day forecast and see if there's any freeze that's coming on the horizon. If there's not, at this point, you're pretty much, able to go ahead and take your frost cloth off, start to cut back all the dead wood from the frost damage, and begin rejuvenating and getting your plants ready for spring. There is the odd occasion when you get the late frost, you know, in late March or, you know, even April, we've had a few crazy frosts, you know, but it's on a very odd occasion. But usually after the 15th of February, 1st of March, you can start turning the corner into spring.
I don't imagine you're seeing a lot of frost damage on trees through the valley. I mean, this was a mild, mild winter.
It was, and even though we had a few frost...
that was like back in December.
I know, and the freeze wasn't these prolonged 4 or 5 day freezes where one day after another is what really gets the trees. And also, it's the long duration of the frost. Sometimes if you have one of those nights where it drops down to 30 degrees, at 10 o'clock at night, and it stays cold all the way till 8 o'clock in the morning, that's when the citrus gets blasted. Because if you get an overnight temperature that dips into the freezing just for an hour or so around, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, that's not going to do that. It's not going to do that much harm to the plants. But we didn't have much of that.
We didn't have much this year at all.
Yeah, so we're happy about that.
Not a complaint on my side. We've got a texter new to Arizona who's ready to plant some produce trees, including apples, peaches, oranges, and they want to do a pecan as well. And The last phase, what do I need to know about watering by hand? So if you're going to water by hand, the last thing I'd plant is up a pecan tree. You might as well just stand out there with a hose all day.
I was going to say, how long do you want to stand out there? Well, depending on how well your soil drains is the big factor. And you can, we have wonderfully heavy soils. It's not so good because it doesn't have very much organic matter in it. But the one quality of our soil is it has high water holding capacity. The tighter the soil, that is, the more clay content that it has, the longer it can hold water. So that's one good thing. That's why our desert plants do so well, is our desert soil can hold the water, make it available to the plants over a longer period of time. So even though, we have to water more, we have extremely high temperatures, be careful that you're not overwatering your plants. Put the water on, make sure you get a depth of saturation to the bottom of the root zone. You can test that by putting a soil probe into the ground. And you can just get a long screwdriver or buy a soil probe at the local nursery or buy them online. And you can push it down into the soil a foot, 2 feet, 3 feet deep, and make sure you can see how deep you're going. You want to go at least 3 feet deep for mature trees, you know, maybe a foot or so deep for your mature shrubs. And then don't water again until the soil profile has dried out. Unfortunately, the soil surface looks dry because it'll dry out within hours sometimes or a day or so, and you think that it's too dry and you need to water again, but you need to be sure you dig down or push the soil probe down into the soil. And as the soil starts drying from the bottom up, you'll start seeing, you know, you can't push the soil probe into the soil any longer. That's time to re-irrigate. But be sure that you don't have actual water that's being held in the soil, and you're putting water on top of water on top of water. It's not only a waste of water, but it also can set up conditions for fungal pathogens to get active in the soil, and you can start having trees and plants start to decline and die from overwatering as a result of that. So, just a tip on now's the time of year to be changing your sprinkler timers back to adding a little bit more water into the landscape. Remember, too, it might be better to increase the duration of the watering cycle rather than increase the number of days you're watering. People always say, okay, we'll put on 3 or 4 more days on, but I'd rather have you just extend the time that you're watering so that the soil has time to dry out between watering.
For someone like this texter who's getting ready to plant trees, what advice ahead of time, right now, before they start, would you have for them on watering systems, types to plant? Is it a good time to plant?
It's a great time to plant trees. Just even your deciduous trees can still be planted right now. There's a lot of stone fruits out there. A lot of nurseries have their fruit trees ready to go, and we just bought a peach and an apricot. And they're still sitting in the containers at our house. We can't wait to get those in this weekend. And it's a great time. You want to prep the soil and never plant. It's just one pruning tip that I just want to really stress is don't plant your trees too deep in the soil. So it's the number one killer of newly planted trees is setting them into the soil a little bit too deep. And even they can sometimes be a little bit too deep, even in the planting container. So the planting soil that's in your pot, you want to dig down and make sure you get to the top of the roots and take some of that topsoil off, because it's that root flare where the roots emerge from the trunk tissue that needs to be right at grade. And sometimes the planting medium is pretty rough textured, and it can settle. So you want to be careful too that you allow for settling. We sometimes talk about planting trees slightly proud, that is a little bit above grade, to allow for settling. And if that top root, if that very top root that emerges from the trunk is right at the soil grade, you've got the tree off to a really good start. The worst thing you can do is drop that plant 3 or 4 inches too deep in the soil. Then soil migrates in around the trunk of the tree. It kind of falls down into the basin around the tree. And that trunk tissue that's buried is really susceptible to fungal pathogens. The soil will wick the moisture up against the trunk and cause some decline in the tree. And we see a lot of fruit trees die because of that. And the roots are too deep in the soil. They don't have the oxygen they need. They're kind of the soil that's in around the top of that root ball now is sort of caps the oxygen, which the roots need for metabolism. So you want to be sure you get that up nice and high and dry, and trees will do really well.
And watering. I'd really encourage this person to invest in some watering system. I mean, even if they have the time and they're retired and they water it by hand, well, then what happens when they move on from the property or the next homeowner is there? You're not going to keep plants alive, non-native plants alive.
And some situations demand some little bit more attention, and hand watering is not a bad thing if you've got the time and you enjoy that. I have found that my best tool I have in my yard is a soaker hose. A soaker hose is a way of delivering water slowly to whatever area you want. You just hook it up to your normal hose, barely pressurize the line, and that water drips out from the soaker hose very, very slowly. And I sometimes will put it around my larger trees that I don't have enough water through my normal irrigation system, usually in the real heat of the summer and our really hot temperatures. And I'll put that soaker hose kind of, wrap it around in various areas out around the drip line of the tree. And I'll turn it on at night, 8 or 9 o'clock at night, set my alarm in the morning to be sure I remember to shut it off. And just getting a nice deep saturation overnight can get down to 2.5-3 feet of depth of saturation. And then I don't have to do that again for 3 or 4 months. So just that's a really great way to deliver some water to your plants. But hand watering is a lot of work. If you forget, or if you have to go away on vacation, then you've got to have someone come over and water for you. And that can be a challenge.
Well, we got through a couple of the main bullet points and notes, kind of like, sitting at church, get through your bulletin. Let's get to the main attraction, what brings us down here, the Arizona State Capitol. And I didn't know it till we started putting this broadcast together. You had a hand in planting a number of these.
Well, we did. About 10 years ago, we cooperated with the Arizona Community Tree Council, the Arizona Nursery Association, Arizona Landscape Contractors Association, and several other vendors from around the valley, including several nurseries, to plant a lot of the trees in the Wesley Boland Plaza. And I just walked over there this morning, and there's 10 large Texas live oaks that line the main sidewalk that goes across the street from the Senate building here. And it's really cool to see trees that we planted 10 years ago. They're doing well, they're thriving, and lining those walks. But one tree I'm especially proud of is a mesquite tree that's in front of the Ag Building, which is right across Washington, that I actually planted myself. I supervised and helped plant some of those others. And, in fact, there's a few pistache trees along the Wesley Boland Memorial Plaza as well that we planted that look awesome. They're just really well-established now and looking beautiful. Don't have any leaves on them right now, but they're just such great shade trees. But the mesquite tree across the street, it's like 35 feet tall, and I'm so proud. I mean, I remember we planted it was just a little sapling. I saw it a few years back, but I hadn't seen it in the last couple of years, and man, it's looking great. It's rewarding to be able to plant a tree. They say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. best time to plant a tree is today, but alternatively 20 years ago would have been nice. And so nice to see that 20 years later, you can check it out and have a beautiful shade tree.
If you'd like to ask John a question, you can get online at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. And you can text your question to 411-923.
Pick up the Saturday edition of the Arizona Republic for Rosie's Home Improvement Column, where we cover the most important topics that every homeowner needs to know.
We are stars. We are dreams.
In a few years, these oak trees are going to be beautiful. It's going to have a nice shaded canopy. Walking up to the State Capitol History Museum. What do you think the oldest tree out here is, though?
Well, the oldest is probably right across the plaza here. Some big old piece of petrified wood.
That's the tree that
has an age on it.
Highest probability of doing well in my yard.
Well, they did pretty well for as long as they were here. They're 3 foot in diameter. Those are some pretty big trees. That is pretty cool. Some really nice pieces of petrified wood down here, two of them that bookend the entrance to the State Capitol building here. beautiful examples of some of the wood that was here prehistorically years and years ago. But there are some big trees here. I've noticed there's a beautiful example of a Chinese elm tree on the south side of the building over here. It has a beautiful sweeping lower limb that grows out over the lawn area there. And there's some ginormous Canary Island date palms. I was surprised. I thought they were just regular Phoenix dactylifera palms, your normal date palms, but these are actually Canary Island date palms, one right here. And there's two there by the in the plaza itself. Yeah, some beautiful big trees here. Nice to walk around and see. Something else I meant to mention, they have an incredible number of flowering trees here. They've got mimosa, jacaranda, silk floss trees, bottle brush trees, magnolias, Hong Kong orchid. And this place must just be beautiful in another month or so when all those trees are blooming.
Now, you have a special guest on the line.
I do. I'm introducing today, we actually introduced Sarah to our audience last year. She was in studio, and last month, she was in studio with us talking about our new plant healthcare division. And I thought it would be good to bring Sarah online today just to talk a little bit about the pests and problems that we face with our trees and shrubs as we turn the corner into spring. Sarah, how are you?
Good morning, John. I'm great.
Well, I wanted to ask you, I started to go through this list this morning. I thought, man, I'm going to get Sarah on the line because she can talk a little more intelligently about this. Sarah is has a degree in horticulture and is a registered consulting arborist and a licensed spray technician, and she's heading up our plant healthcare division at Integrity Tree Service. We're so happy to have her on board. We just launched this new program in January this year, and we began to spray olives this month and for the next month. And by the way, I want to take a minute to give a shout out to Ray Lopez of Scottsdale Weed Control. Ray's a good friend and a colleague in our industry and has provided a wonderful service for us in spraying olives for us in these past several years. And as we've launched our own program, we won't be using Ray's service going forward, but we wanted to say thank you for years of treating our customers well and delivering some great service for us. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate that. Sarah, what are we looking at over this next couple of weeks and months for pest and insect problems?
Well, we really want to get a jump ahead this year on the ficus whitefly, John, because we really feel a prevention program is going to be beneficial. Last year, Ground Zero hit end of March, and the major infestations came in, and this was an insect we hadn't seen before.
What kind of a treatment do you put down? What kind of a treatment do they need?
We need to apply a systemic insecticide into the root zone by deep root injection, and that's translocated by the tree up into the leaves and the branches, and it will protect the tree from the whitefly.
Excellent. What else is coming up?
Well, we all know that psyllids hit the cascalotes pretty heavy and defoliate those.
Of course we do. What hit who?
Psyllid is an insect, and they get all over our cascalotes and some other trees. And what's the treatment for your psyllids on your cascalotes?
It's the same thing. We want to do a preventative systemic. And so we just have to be really careful with them, though, that we do not apply until they're done blooming. We want to protect our bees.
Okay, good. What about any other insect problems that we're dealing with this time of year?
Well, we have usually, you know, you see over the summer, you see agaves dying all over. But the proper treatment for that is in March and May. We do two applications of a systemic insecticide to prevent agave snout weevil from killing all our beautiful agave.
And what is this this snout weevil? It sounds kind of evil.
Well, it's a black bug with kind of a long, skinny black snout, and they fly around late summer and they lay their eggs, and the eggs then burrow down into the root system of the agave and form into big fat larvae, and that's what we try to get a hold of those and kill those.
So these two treatments in March and May, we do an injection down into the soil around the agaves as kind of a preventative or to kill the weevils as they emerge?
It's if you do the two treatments in those months, you're able to hit the life cycle at the most vulnerable part. And so that's the way we're able to eliminate them the best.
Great. What else are we looking at? I know there's some blooming trees that we're people have constantly are complaining about mesquite pods and oak acorns. And I know that we've been had some success in applying plant growth regulators to control seed pod development. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, I was actually real successful last year on oak trees. And so we're doing a lot of oak trees this year already. They're scheduled probably the first week of March. We're going to watch our blossoms, and that's when we should hit the oaks. The mesquites we want to hit when they're blooming. And, you know, it takes one or two applications to really suppress the pods. You can't get rid of them all, but there's so many pods on them. If you can just get rid of 50% of them with one application, it's really so much labor intense to clean them up.
I know a lot of our listeners will be happy to hear that can be done. I remember a customer I saw a year or two ago, and their entire backyard was covered with blue tarps from corner to corner. I didn't understand, and they said, no, we're never going to be, we don't want to be raking up these pods. So they let the entire pod harvest drop to the ground, then they pick up all their tarps and put them away for another year. But no, it's really nice to know.
They drop and drop and drop and drop. I mean, yeah. It seems like they never stop.
Yeah.
And so we have a couple of local nurseries that have big mesquite trees that are shading their crops. And they use the floral treatment and have a really great reduction in suppression in the pods.
Sarah, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate you taking time out of your weekend. To you soon.
All righty. Have a good day, John.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Now, John, you can take a tip out of Jennifer's home ownership manual, and she throws bed sheets under her mesquites, harvests the beans, and then she grinds them up flours and makes mesquite tortillas.
Wow. I like that.
I mean, it's the whole bean. You don't do anything. Jennifer, you just throw it in the bullet, right? She just throws the whole thing in the bullet, and sometimes we'll have 8 or 9 5-gallon buckets in the garage of just harvested
beans
that she turns into flour.
I've heard of that. I've heard the flour is wonderful. I've actually tasted the little seed pods, and now I know why the dogs eat those pods all the time. They just love those. They're really sweet, and the flour must be wonderful.
Well, yeah. We'll get you some mesquite tortillas from Jennifer's Kitchen.
I want some of those pancakes made out of that flour. I've heard those are good too.
They are.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to our call at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888. Rosie, for you, I believe it's Mark who's got a question about frost protection. Go ahead, Mark.
For Mr. Eisenhower, we have two about 15-year-old ficuses in the Camelback and Central area, and we must be in some kind of a microclimate there because I don't see damage on other ficuses, particularly around garden-setting businesses. But we get freeze on the top of those with almost any coldness each year. And we're in the process of trying to get protection up on top where we would have a couple of long PVC poles to bring it up on top over the cross the trees and anchor it in the corners. Is there, other than the vulnerable frost protection cloth, is there anything else? Will any of the tarps help us on something like that to keep just enough warmth at the crown that they can get through these tougher times?
Well, we've been using a double-sided duct tape material to put our panels of frost cloth together to try to keep more of an airtight seal between the panels, because on the larger trees when we do tarp those, they're a little difficult to manage because of the size of the trees. But we've had some really great success the last couple of years. We have a couple of our customers are put floodlights underneath. They put Christmas lights all the way up through the trees before we put the shade cloth on. So it adds a little bit of additional heat to the system. Also, the frost cloth needs to come all the way to the ground with a couple of feet to spare so you can seal the bottom, because it's the the moisture from the ground that helps to keep some humidity inside the this sealed dome of under the frost cloth that really gives it the protection. If you don't have the bottom sealed, that cold air gets right up underneath, and it's sort of a waste of time. Some of the larger ficus trees, we did one this year, and it was just, it blew off in that big wind we had several weeks ago, so we had to go put it back up again. But we can do pretty large trees. Mike, who works with us, Mike Logan is one of our technicians, and he's just developed some really great techniques for getting these bigger trees covered.
Does any of them involve like a helicopter or some aerial? Some of those ficus trees are 50, 60 feet tall.
We have used man lifts to help us assist, but you know, a couple of large ladders are pretty good. We have used the technique that the listener was mentioning about using some long poles to kind of help to advance some of the frost cloth up and over the top of the bigger trees. And we've, of course, climbed right up in the top of the trees and had a climber right in the very top working with the people on the ground. And it's quite an operation.
You don't see the frost cloth from the crown to the ground very often.
No, you don't. We've got a... we have some pictures of some pretty cool ones. Maybe we'll try to post them on our website to kind of show listeners, you know, what it can look like. But it's pretty cool. It's really, really nice. And it gives, you know, even if there's a little bit of frost damage, it's far better than losing half the tree. And when you take the frost cloth off every spring, which we're going to be doing this week, we do notice there's a little bit of frost damage in some of them, but far less than there would have been had they not been covered.
From today's broadcast, the beautiful trees that are out here on the Wesley Boland Plaza and the whole state capitol grounds. But we have a pretty special broadcast coming up and a pretty neat arboretum in Arizona.
Yeah, coming up on February 27th, we will be having the Arizona Community Tree Council's Tree Climbing Championship, which the ACTC hosts every year. But this year, we won't be in Flagstaff like we were last year or in Prescott the year before. We will be at the Boyce Thompson Arboretum in just outside Superior. And we had the tree climbing competition there, I want to say 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and it was a blast. They have these incredible eucalyptus trees, which those of you who've been to the Arboretum are very familiar with. It's the Australian garden they have there, and it's just an amazing place. But it's a good day to get out, get your whole family out, go see the Boyce Thompson Arboretum. If you've been planning a trip out there, this should be a great weekend to go. The weather's beautiful. The trees are all blooming, and it's just an incredible place. But what a great time of year. Before it gets too hot, February 27th, Saturday, mark your calendar to go out to see some of the best tree climbers in the state of Arizona competing for in several different events. It's a judged competition. The winner of that event will go on and represent Arizona in a regional competition toward the ISA International World Championships, which are held somewhere in the world every year. Arizona's feature tree climbing competition is coming up on Saturday, February 27th.
Then a couple weeks after that, we're actually in your backyard.
We will be at the Real Gardens for Real People tour at our garden. We would love to see some of our listeners come out and drop by the Rosie on the House table. We'll have our Talking Trees radio broadcast from 8 to 9 o'clock. Then the tree tour starts at 9 o'clock. We might even have a few giveaways to give to our listeners who come by the radio booth at our garden on that day.
You can check the community calendar at rosieonthehouse.com for more details on those events. We've got a texter that has a orange tree that's done wonderful for years and years and years, and they recently planted a garden nearby. And this year, they have no oranges. And they want to know if there's any reason you would think that the garden has anything to do with the orange tree not producing.
Well, it's always good to be looking at possible disruption of the root zone of the tree through any kind of construction activities. People sometimes wonder why their trees aren't doing so well when they've trenched near them or had a construction project nearby where they've had to cut roots. If the garden is that close and you were actually cutting some roots, it could certainly affect the overall health of the tree. Why it wouldn't bear fruit at all is another issue. I'm not really certain. We had a really low fruit-producing year this year because we had a little lapse in our irrigation for a couple weeks, and it really affected our harvest this year. So we have fewer fruits than we did. So, and sometimes fruits are kind of alternate bearing years. They've got a really bumper crop one year, then the next year they'll have a lighter fruit set. And it's just a function of the overall health of the tree. Good reason to be fertilizing at least once a year.
And then a couple in Tucson want to know about figs. Any good varieties that grow in Tucson?
You know, I'm not really certain. I know Tucson's a little bit colder, and figs being a deciduous tree, I think they'd be fine, just like they are here in Phoenix. They don't mind the colder winters. I would really consult with one of your local nurseries, like Savano Nursery or one of the others down there, and get some advice on what would be a good variety to plant in the Tucson area.
Do you have any figs on your grounds?
We have a big fig tree. It's a beautiful tree. It's older. It's got a lot of dead wood in it, but the dead wood is supporting some of the live branches. So we're kind of nursing this tree along. We were just looking at it yesterday, wondering if we're going to have to put a prop under one of the large branches to prevent it from breaking. Because if those big dead limbs in the inside that are kind of providing a scaffold for the live limbs would ever break, then the live limbs would simply collapse. But it's a big, big, beautiful tree. Yeah, it's a good 30 feet across, about 20 feet tall. It's beautiful.
You have some good produce coming off it?
Yeah, it will occasionally produce two harvests in a year, so it's kind of cool. Some fruit trees will do that. They'll have a main fruit set, and then they'll produce some fruit a little bit later in the year.
Now, you've got a couple teaching classes coming up as well. You spend a lot of time at Botanical Gardens helping homeowners get a little bit
If you want some, we teach these three-hour pruning clinics all through the spring, and the two that are coming up right now is for City of Scottsdale residents only. We're having a pruning class on March 5th, Saturday, March 5th, at the Xeriscape Garden, Hayden and McDonald Drive. You can register through the City of Scottsdale. Also, we have one of the classes I'm teaching at the Desert Botanical Garden. The next one is Sunday, April 10th. That should be up on the Desert Botanical Garden website, and you can register for that.
And if somebody wants to get a hold of you?
Best way to get a hold of us is through our website, which is www.itreeservice.com. That's just the letter I, treeservice.com. You'll have all the information on contacting us.
And any closing thoughts here? We've got a lot of bullet points for February. We've got pruning. The best advice is probably don't overdo it.
Well, this is a time of year when all your shrubs can be cut back. If you want to cut some of those smaller shrubs back, you can make a little heavier pruning on those, do some restoration, rejuvenation pruning, and a good time to be pruning all your evergreen trees as well.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to get on, or text 411-923 as we move into our open line hour here at Rosie on the House. We appreciate it. John Eisenhower, our certified arborist at Integrity Tree Service. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Keep Rosie on the House the number one referral directory in the state by voting at rosieonthehouse.com or ranking Arizona.